Hari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana. Yashoda Nandana Yamuna Tira Vana Chari Yamuna Tira Vana Chari Yara Brahma Dava Punya Vihari Paramahansa Parivrajika Acharya Stotara Sutra Sri Srimadis Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Dantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanande Hari Hari Bho Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai All grace to your son of devotee All grace to your son of devotee All grace to your son of devotee All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 6, Conversation Between Narada and Vyasadeva, Text 22. Word meanings, Sukrit, once only, yet that, Darshitam, shown, Rupam, form, Etat, this is, Kamaya, for hankering, Hey, you are anagha, O virtuous one. Mat, minds, kamaha, desire. Shanakai, by increasing. Sadhu, devotee. Sarvan, all. Munchati, gives away. Pritshayan, material desires. Sakritya darshitam rupam
Sakritya darshitam rupam
Etat kamayate nagha
Etat kamayate nagha
Mat kama shanakai sadhu
Mat kama shanakai sadhu
Sarvan munchati richayan Sakridya darshitam rupam
Sakridya darshitam rupam
Etat kamayate nagha
Etat kamayate nagha
Mat kama shanakai sadhu
Mat kama shanakai sadhu
Sarvan munchati richchayan Sakridya darshitam rupam
Sakridya darshitam rupam
Etat kamayate nagha
Etat kamayate nagha
Matkama Shanakai Sadhu.
Matkama Shanakai Sadhu.
Sarvam Munchati Richchayam.
Translation. O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be freed from all material desires. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A living being cannot be vacant of desires. He is not a dead stone. He must be working, thinking, feeling, and willing. But when he thinks, feels, and wills materially, he becomes entangled. And conversely, when he thinks, feels, and wills for the service of the Lord, he becomes gradually free from all entanglement. The more a person is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, the more he acquires a hankering for it. That is the transcendental nature of godly service. Material service has satiation, whereas spiritual service of the Lord has neither satiation nor end. One can go on increasing his hankerings for the loving transcendental service of the Lord, and yet he will not find satiation or end. By intense service of the Lord, one can experience the presence of the Lord transcendentally. Therefore, seeing the Lord means being engaged in his service, because his service and his person are identical. The sincere devotee should go on with sincere service of the Lord. The Lord will give proper direction as to how and where it has to be done. There was no material desire in Narada, and yet, just to increase his intense desire for the Lord, he was so advised. Samadhyana Pinarandhasya, Dhyananjana Shalakaya, Chakshuri Muditamena, Vasmai Sri Gurve Namaha. Today is also the disappearance day of Vrindavan Das Thakur. There's not as much information about him. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives him great credit and honor for writing Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he says he will write only the things that Vrindavan Das Thakur has not elaborated on. Vrindavan Das Thakur was the son of Narayani Devi, who was an important person in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which Vrindavan Das Thakur wrote about in his Chaitanya Bhagavat. There's one nice scene there where Lord Chaitanya is He's angry actually at the mulchas and trying to stop the Sankirtan movement, and he's saying how he's going to make everyone, he's going to give everyone love of God, even the mulchas. And then he sees little four-year-old Narayani there, and gives her some prasadam, and he says, "Speak, Narayani." So she calls out, "Oh, Krishna," and then she's, tears flood from her eyes, and she wets the ground around her. She shows symptoms of transcendental ecstasy. That was Vrindavan Das Thakur's mother. Vrindavan Das Thakur, of course, he is said to be the Vyas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami calls him that. In the Gaura Ganadesh Deepika, he's mentioned as that, but he's also mentioned as one of the cowherd friends of Krishna. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, it's interesting, in several places, Vrindavan Das Thakur says, he's describing some pastime of Lord Chaitanya, then he'll say, "In the future, Vyasadeva will elaborate on this pastime, or all these pastimes." But he's Vyasadeva himself, and he's saying that in the future, Vyasadeva will write about these things. I guess there'll be a Chaitanya Purana maybe at some point. I don't know. So today's verse, now this is kind of a pair of verses. I was thinking we have many scenes in the Bhagavatam, so this is such a nice scene, isn't it? Narada Muni is sitting down to meditate. Apparently, he's been practicing his sadhana. We heard before that he was given this mantra. He was given initiation into the mantra of Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Padjuna, and Anirudha. So he's been traveling around, but then he's sitting down to meditate, and immediately he gets the darshan of the Lord. So then the Lord appears to him in the previous verse. Well, first he appears, of course, and then he disappears. So in the previous verse, yesterday's or Friday's verse, "O Narada," the Lord spoke, "I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me." So our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, and Srila Prabhupada somewhat, they draw from this the idea that, and also today's verse, "O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you'll be freed from all material desires." So even though he's such an elevated soul, experiencing some high level of Krishna consciousness, there's a hint here that he may still have some material desires that have to be taken care of somehow. So this is discussed in different places in our books. I'm going to start with reading something from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this. This is his part of his commentary on Friday's verse. So he's quoting, what did he say? In other words, what did Krishna say to Narada? He said, "Hanta, oh, this is an address made out of affection." And then again he's quoting Krishna. "In this birth, having the body of a practitioner, you cannot see me. I am invisible, Durdarsha, to those faulty practitioners of yoga, kuyoginam, whose contaminations such as lust have not been burned up." The intention here is to say, but I showed myself to you. Therefore, you are not a faulty practitioner. So then in the next verse, in Vishwanath's commentary to the next verse, he writes, "Seeing me only once, not many times, is enough to produce desire for me, kamaya. By only slight increase in loving prema, in longing, prema will not develop to the state of youthfulness in a person having somewhat weak prema." You'll see as I continue what that's about. "Prema will not develop to the state of youthfulness in a person having somewhat weak prema. My rule is that I show myself one time only to a person practicing in his present body, his sadhaka deha, who has developed prema." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So even if you have prema, you may get darshan of Krishna, but only one time, if you're still in your sadhaka deha. Then this is to elaborate on this youthfulness idea. The infant state of prema in the sadhaka's body matures to a youthful state in the siddha deha by an increase of prema arising from longing and separation. That youthful prema allows the devotee to see me constantly and serve me directly. Because I remember hearing Prabhupada sometimes, he would say, because people say, oh, last night I had a dream, I saw Krishna behind a bush in Vrindavan or whatever. And Prabhupada would say, when you see Krishna, you will always see Krishna. Because that means that your heart is pure enough to have Krishna's darshan. So here we're getting a little bit of a twist on this. Yeah, you'll see Krishna always if you're actually in your siddha deha. So he says, the youthful prema, youthful, apparently, of course I don't have the Sanskrit here, but maybe the word is yovana or something like that. Yovana prema. And maybe Kaishora prema was the first one where it said infant state. That youthful prema allows the devotee to see me constantly and serve me directly. I alone, and not my devotee, know the process of fulfilling the desires of my devotee. But we don't know how to. Even the pure devotee doesn't know how to fulfill his own desire. You who simply desire me, matkama, even without having seen me, or previously, will become free from all desires for material enjoyment. This statement does not actually apply to Narada, Vishwanath elaborates here, since he did not have any material desires, being at the level of prema already. But saying this, the Lord shows the nature of devotion. Additionally, by saying this, the Lord increases the humility of Narada. So we might think it's settled here, but it tends to be not necessarily settled. But there's more discussion of this by Jiva Goswami. He elaborates on this somewhat. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in a commentary in the fifth canto. So I'm going to do some more reading. I find this interesting. But in the Bhakti Sandarbha, Anucheda 57 or 58, they're numbered differently in different books. There's a topic there. Actually, this is from 153, from Kushikrata Prabhu's translation of the Bhakti Sandarbha. So Bhakti Sandarbha, of course, is about bhakti. It's sort of like the nectar devotion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's very similar. So there's a discussion there of offenses, and what is the result of offenses a devotee might make. So Jiva Goswami, he makes a list of offenses. He says, from offenses, the following obstacles to pure devotional service arise. Now I'm reading this because you'll see that the context has to do with Narada Muni and also Bharat Maharaj and their statuses. He says, from offenses, the following obstacles to pure devotional service arise. 1, crookedness. 2, faithlessness. You can lose your faith by offenses. Attachment to things that destroy faith in the Lord. So material attachments. This is the one he's going to elaborate on, material attachments. Slackness in devotional service, and pride in being advanced in devotional service. So there's a discussion that leads up to something, actually quoting these verses. The way I came across this, by the way, is Kushikrata Prabhu, he compiled all of the verses in the Sandarbhas that Jiva Goswami quoted. All the Bhagavatam verses in the Sandarbhas that Jiva Goswami quoted. So I have a file, like if I look up Srimad Bhagavatam 111, then it will say Bhagavat Sandarbha Anucheda such and such, and it will say what Jiva Goswami said about this particular verse. So I looked around to see if Jiva Goswami had, because I don't have Jiva Goswami's commentary on the Bhagavatam. So I looked to see, and I found that he spoke on the first of these two verses, the Friday's verse. But the whole purport, you might say, is the same. So he talks about these in the Bhakti Sandarbha. He quotes this verse of Narada's. So there's some discussion leading up to it, having to do with this point about whether a devotee with prema can have material desires or not, when sometimes it appears that they do, and even Krishna sort of implying here that, well, you're not completely pure yet, so I have to do something to purify you, even though he's experiencing prema, he could get the direct darshan of Krishna. So what is this all about? So this, there's some discussion here. So I'm going to read a couple of different translations from the Sandarbhas. Let's see. This is from Anucheda 157 of the Bhakti Sandarbha. And this is Kushikrata Prabhu's translation. So he's quoting Jiva Goswami. And he says, an example, so this is in the context of these five reactions to your offenses. One of them had said, you'll create obstacles because of having material desires will sprout up and block your fate. Says, an example of the obstacles that make one fall away from faith in the Lord is given in the following words. So this is from the, in the context of Bharat Maharaj's fall down. This is the verse. It's quite a long verse. It's a prose verse in the 5th canto, 8th chapter, text 26. My dear king, in this way, Bharat Maharaj was overwhelmed by an uncontrollable desire which was manifest in the form of the deer. The desire was manifest in the form of the deer. Due to the fruitive results of his past deeds, he fell down from mystic yoga, austerity, and worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If it were not due to his past fruitive activity, how could he have been attracted to the deer after giving up his association of his own son and family, considering them stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual life? How could he show uncontrollable affection for a deer? This was definitely due to his past karma. The king was so engrossed in petting and maintaining the deer that he fell down from his spiritual activities. In due course of time, insurmountable death, which is compared to a venomous snake that enters the hole created by a mouse, situated itself before him. So then the question comes up here. Jiva Goswami says, ordinary fruitive activities are not strong enough to create such impediment in the path of devotional service. Therefore, the fruitive activities mentioned here must have been offenses performed in a previous birth. So even though the verse actually says, now the Sanskrit for that is a swarabdha karma. We're all familiar with this word, prarabdha karma. So swarabdha karma means his own prarabdha karma. Or swa can also mean Krishna, which we'll see that plays into it too. Therefore, the fruitive activities mentioned here must have been offenses performed in a previous birth. In this way, King Bharata is like King Indradumna and other devotees that committed offenses. So then, now I'm going to read, let me continue here. This leads up to the verse that we read on Friday. This is Anucheda 158. This again is Kushikrata Prabhu's translation. Some think that the Lord himself arranges for this kind of previous activity so the devotee will be separated from him, long to attain him, and in this way come to love him more than before. The previous birth of Narada Muni, where even though he had begun to love the Lord, he still had material desires, is an example of this. The Lord explains this in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.21. So that was Friday's verse. O Narada, the Lord spoke, I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. Now, I want to read another translation of this. This is by Satyanarayana Das. He's a very great student of the Sandarbhas. He had written commentaries on them. So this is what he says about Bhakti Sandarbha, which he doesn't have a commentary on this, but this is just his translation. It's in the same place of what I just read about from Kushikrata, but worded slightly differently. He says, some people are of the opinion that the Lord personally intensifies the normal prarabdha karma of such devotees just to increase their hankering to attain him. The Bhagavatam, in fact, describes the heightening of Bharata's desire to attain the Lord in the next life when he received the body of a deer. Another example of this is seen in the past life of Sri Narada Muni, when he was the young son of a maidservant. Although he had attained the state of Rati, or love for the Lord preserved a trace of material desire in him to magnify his efforts to attain him. Isn't that interesting? Krishna left some material desire. Somehow that material desire helps him to attain Krishna, because I guess he's feeling that, oh, I'm not there yet. Said the Lord thus provoked the boy by speaking the following words. So again, that's that verse that I read. Now Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to this verse that I read about Bharat Maharaj, I was going to read about, it's a little, I'm reading a lot here. But anyway, Prabhupada, he also raises the point of, well, devotional service, the devotee's karma is supposed to be destroyed. Karmani nirdhati kintu jibakti bhajan, the Brahma Samhita says. So he says, according to this, Bharat Maharaj could not be punished for his past misdeeds. The conclusion must be that Bharat Maharaj purposefully became over-addicted to the deer and neglected his spiritual advancement. To immediately rectify his mistake, for a short time he was awarded the body of a deer. This was just to increase his desire for mature devotional service. So the way Prabhupada is presenting it here, Bharat Maharaj just, it wasn't an accident, he just decided to do it. Now here, I'll go on with a little fine-tuning here. This is from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a commentary on this verse. I think he makes some important points. Because he mentioned, he says or a few times, or twice. For he gives an explanation, then he says or, and then he gives another explanation. So he gives, you might say, three different explanations or three perspectives on it. Reading this, I was thinking, we can see how sometimes our acharyas might disagree with each other, because even the same one acharya can sometimes have different ways of looking at the same thing and different ways of explaining it, according to his bhava, according to his realization, according to how Krishna is inspiring him. So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says on 5.8.26, the verse about Bharat Maharaj falling down. He fell from his position in yoga and worship of the Lord by the influence of karmas of this life, which manifested a small deer to him. Prarabdha karma is of two types, auspicious and inauspicious. The first type occurs by the will of the Lord to increase longing for devotion to the Lord, like sharp ointment applied to the eyes. So this is the idea that we heard before. Krishna's doing this to somehow inspire him to try harder. This is accepted favorably by the devotee. Even though it's karma, you might say, because we all have infinite karma, so Krishna can take some of it and keep it for us, to help us. Krishna can use anything to help anybody. That's his mystic power. So being similar to prarabdha karma, it is accepted as such. So it's prarabdha karma in quotation marks, I would say. That which creates more intense bhakti in the future takes place in those who already possess reti or bhava. They're the same things, reti and bhava. The second type of prarabdha karma consists of results of actions of previous lifetimes which manifest later as absorption in material life. In the verse, the first type is indicated by the word su in swarabdha karma na. So this, the way it's taken here, is su. Su means good. Incidentally, I just heard recently, maybe I heard this before, this is just a little aside here, that Duryodhana, he was originally Suyodhana. And Suyodhana means one who fights for the good. But because he was such a rascal, he got picked up the name Duryodhana, one who fights for the bad. So here, Su-arabdha karmana, this is indicated that this was good prarabdha karma. Bharat fell from his austerity of rejecting material enjoyment, which was produced by bhakti yoga. The word cha means even. Even though bhakti does not have great obstacles. Even though bhakti does not have great obstacles. In other words, bhakti is so powerful, there are no real obstacles for it. He fell from worship of the Lord by the will of the Lord. How else could he fall? Except by prarabdha karma arranged by the will of the Lord. He had already given up his sons. So now we have an or. So another way of looking at it. Or, He fell by the semblance of karma in the form of a deer. So it looked like karma, but it was actually a deer. Similarly, those who have developed vrutti do not have prarabdha karma, but have semblance of prarabdha karma. And then the third, another or. Or he fell down because of the inferior fawn through auspicious prarabdha karma. Under the influence of his good prarabdha karma, Bharat took care of the deer. Otherwise, if there had been no good karma, he would not have a desire to care for the deer. So this is interesting. This reminds me of, in Bhagavad Gita, you'll see, of course, Krishna is chastising Arjuna for being attached. But at the same time, at least in Prabhupada's purports, he praises Arjuna for being a tender-hearted Vaishnava. The same thing happens with Draupadi, actually, in the pastime of Draupadi. She's going to say, well, she's just a less intelligent, sentimental woman. But then there was an old tape in the old tape industry, something about Draupadi's tender heart or loving heart or something, heart of devotion. So that's a good thing for a Vaishnava to have a tender heart. So we see both of these, there's kind of this paradox going on here. So if he weren't a pure-hearted Vaishnava, he wouldn't have felt, oh, I have to take care of this deer. So it was a natural thing. So that's what he's saying here. Otherwise, if there had been no good karma, he would not have a desire to care for the deer. Bharata's fall, however, was arranged by the Lord for the purpose of increasing his longing for bhakti after taking birth as a deer and a brahmana. So this theme is really what seems to be, you know, the thread that's running through it, is this is about Krishna helping Narada somehow or other. Well, however you want to categorize it, this is what it's about. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he quotes this from the 10th canto. This is Krishna speaking to the gopis during the Rasa dance after he disappeared and came back. He said, but the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living entities, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. So, and then he finishes, just as Prabhupada finishes his translation actually. He did not think of himself. Death arrived like a snake approaching a mouse hole. In other words, when death came, he didn't really care about death. He wasn't bothered by death. He was absorbed in his hankering for Krishna. So he wasn't afraid of death. This reminds me, by the way, there's a very sobering verse by Narada Muni in the 5th canto in the residence of Jambudweep offer prayers. You know, Narada Muni, it says that different people lead the devotees in offering prayers in the different dweepas, different varshas of Jambudweep. So in Bharatavarsha, Narada Muni is leading the devotees in offering prayers to the Lord. And one of the prayers that Narada Muni offers is that if despite all of one's spiritual practices, one is still afraid of death, then all of one's practices have been useless. Actually, the word there is Shrama Evahi Kevalam. Now in the Sanskrit, of course, it says yoga, but still, Prabhupada, he doesn't say, well, it's about your practice is supposed to bring you to fearlessness of death. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he said, I'm not afraid, let this snake bird come, whatever it is, let me just go on chanting the glories of the Lord. So this was indicated here also, as indicated by Krishna Chakravarti Thakur. Narada Muni wasn't afraid of death, he didn't really even notice. He was just absorbed in his hankering, that Krishna gave him such intense hankering. This example here is so nice. You have something and then you lose it. Imagine if, you know, somebody gives you like a really, really a lot of money and then, you know, somehow you lose it, you misplace it. Oh my God, what did I do with this? Somebody just gave me, you know, $10,000 or whatever. And then I left it somewhere. I have no idea where it is. Now you'd be going crazy. You'd be looking every place you could possibly look. So this analogy is giving you Narada lost. Oh, he lost the most valuable thing, worth a lot more than 10,000, a million, or a billion, or a trillion. So much, the value of it is incalculable. So that's what these verses are about. They give this nice picture. Another thing I was thinking in the context of this verse this section here, sometimes given this as an example when we're, you know, telling people about Krishna consciousness, one thing we say is that we have a practice, and it's been proven to be true, and it's just like any science, a scientist will perform the experiment and then report on the results. So this is what Narada Muni has done. His gurus gave him the formula, and he applied the formula, he did the experiment in his laboratory, and he got the results, and we're here, but he's telling Vyasadeva what happened to him. I chanted Hare Krishna, and I get to see Krishna. So we have an eyewitness account of the effectiveness, the validity of the process of Krishna consciousness in the life of Narada Muni. So that's, of course, that's part of the power of the Bhagavatam, is that not only do we have the teachings of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but we have devotees personifying the teachings. That's why they're called acharyas. They're the epitome of the practice of Krishna consciousness. So Narada Muni, of course, in so many places in the Bhagavatam, he brings out so many lessons that Krishna wanted to reveal through the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll stop here. I'll read these two verses together just because they're so nice. Oh Narada, I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. O virtuous one, you have only once seen my person, and this is just to increase your desire for me, because the more you hanker for me, the more you will be free from all material desires. There's so many things here. Swaha and Ambarish. That's the last time? I don't know which one, it's a whole page of them. The blue part, down at the bottom. Starting here. Fall downs due to previous births, as in the case of Maharaj Bharata. What about worship of Tulsi? Were these devotees not worshipping Tulsi because she excuses offenses? Yeah, so that's true. We have different things to get rid of offenses. That's an important point, of course. Yes, we can suffer because of offenses, but we can also do things to get rid of offenses. Of course, when you offend a Vaishnava, generally it's recommended that you apologize to that and try to get the forgiveness from that devotee. But it's true, there are certain things that it says will free one of offenses, until Sudevi is extremely merciful. Please elaborate more on Jiva Goswami's statement, which seems incredible, but I accept because he said it, that the fruitive activities referred to when the Lord speaks to Narada are offenses. This precise connection between fruitive acts and offenses blows my mind. If you can please speak on or speculate on this correction. He gives that as one possibility. He says that he may have committed offenses in his previous life, and now he's suffering the results of those offenses. Right? So that's one explanation, of course, and he gives others. Now sometimes, it seems to be implied in what it is. He does say it directly that, well, we can look at it this way or we can look at it that way. If this explanation doesn't satisfy you, then you can take this other explanation. But this is one way of explaining it. And also, as I read in Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary, he gives this whole explanation, but then he says about the devotee having material desires, but then he says, but this is not for you, Narada. So he makes the whole thing sound as if he's talking about Narada. Then at the end he says, well, I'm not actually talking about Narada here. So sometimes he's giving an explanation and it may seem like he's referring to specifically this instance, but he may be talking in a general way. So that also happens. So the idea is that by your offenses, well, we know it can. Who knows what it's going to cause? It can cause so many problems. Okay, we're pulling up another here. Oh, here. It's amazing how Krishna loves us so much. He always tries to increase our attachment for Him. Yes, of course, He does. like Prabhupada says, Krishna is more eager for us to go back to him than we are to go back to him. Okay, thank you for answering my question, which arose having heard in Bhanu Swami's Madhurya Kadambani seminar that Bhada Maharaj fell down to a fence from last life, but didn't specify what it was. He said he was not attached to a fuzzy animal like we might think. Then again, Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj also mentioned this in a lecture, but again, not about what the offense was. Question, offense against devotees or holy names or service or the deities? Well, it's not specified, so I don't know. I don't really know myself. It's not explained. Maybe the devotee doesn't want to explain. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, maybe he knows. He might not want to say what it was. He doesn't want to make an offense by revealing the defense that the devotee made. He's protecting himself.
This is a suggestion from Mother Nanda. Wow, this is a lot of interesting info to digest in one class. Please, my suggestion is perhaps you could give 3 evening classes on these topics. And Mother Madhumati will agree. Just ask her.
Oh, he wants Madhumati to give the classes. Okay. Yeah, because I just said everything I know, so I don't have anything else to say.
Right. Yes, I definitely agree with Ananda. Why just feel?
All right, Srila Prabhupada.
I have one question.
Oh, she has a question. I'm trying to escape here.
But there are human beings around here in person.
So I'm trying to understand. You mentioned earlier, like Nanda, there's so much information, and I don't know if I'm even quoting it correctly, but you mentioned that Sunarda, or one who has darshan of Krishna, they are in prema. Am I correct? Is that what you had mentioned?
Well, there was a mention of the sadhaka deya and the siddha deya. And it says they both may be in prema, but one is in the earlier stages of prema in the sadhaka body. That we said the infant stage of prema in the sadhaka body, and one has to have the siddha deha to be in the mature stage of prema, and then one has constant darshan of the Lord. In the sadhaka, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that Krishna says, my rule is that I only show you myself once when you're in the sadhaka deha. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. So I'm still waiting for that one.
I have. I remember when I read Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu, a commentary of Rupa Goswami Padma. There is a verse. It says, "Utpanna rataya samman nairvigna anupagata Krishna sakshat kito yugga sadhaka parikirtita." The definition of sadhaka is that he is eligible to see, so the Lord show him one time. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commentary. But he has a nirvigna anupagata, but he still has some vigna obstacles in his path that is not eradicated completely. So that's the definition of Swarup Siddhi. And then in Vasti Siddhi he says, avigna akhila klesha, everything is gone. Because that body, it cannot be in sadhaka body, because the prem is so much that sadhaka body cannot handle. So it's require I guess Satchidananda body, like self as a different non-difference from the soul, is the body or something like that.
Well, the ashtish sattvika vikar, they come from that. The devotee's body can't handle it. That's
yes,
why
yes.
It explodes, you know, it erupts, and because it can't handle that much ecstasy, basically. I was just saying, as you were saying vigna, I was thinking devotees, they say this, bhakti vigna vinash nisinga bhagavan. So nisinga can also get rid of these bhakti vignas, these obstacles to bhakti. Vigna means obstacles. We pray to nisinga dev also to remove our obstacles, which can also include the results of our offenses.
We see the example of Bilamangal Thakur, like Jarabharati. There is still a gradual process. Doesn't look like they... I mean, I don't see an example of like they did not have anything from Siddha Deha to Vastu Siddhi, sorry, Sadhan Siddhi to Vastu Siddhi, there is like a without escaping the sadhan vigna. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know any example. But well, those examples are given in that book, I remember.
Sometimes these histories, we don't know how accurate the histories are, so we don't know the details. I was just thinking this yesterday, how Vilvamangal Thakur was supposed to have lived 700 years. And we hear that and we say, yeah, okay. Other people say, wow, you're crazy, what are you talking about, 700 years? But when did he live? I'm not sure when he lived and how accurate any, you know, this could just be the oral tradition coming down in Brudge for hundreds and hundreds of years. I don't know. So what exactly were the details of his life? You know, we hear some things and probably repeat them, but we don't know so much exactly how it unfolded.
I have another question on the purport, or maybe the translation. You read the satiation. Is the satiation, is the stage, is a component, or is it end? What, or both?
Usually, well, satiated means full, basically. The idea is that when you're satiated, you don't want anymore. So usually we probably talk about no satiation. But it's also used in the sense of just you're satisfied, you're not hangry. But of course, in one sense, you could say the devotee doesn't. He's never satiated because the devotee always wants more. The gopis weren't ever satisfied. Oh, we went with Krishna last night. Tonight I'll stay home, babysit. No, it's always there. Nava nava rasa dhamma yutita mrantamasi. The devotee's always getting a newer taste. So in that sense, there's always more and more hankering. But on the other side, you can say, we say you will never be satisfied in life. Yourself will never be satisfied until you come to Krishna. So you might say satiated. Yes, now I'm satisfied. But usually Prabhupada uses it in that negative way. He would say that material life, you become satiated in the sense that you just don't want it anymore. Just like you eat something, it's so good. And then when you eat, you know, once I offer you fourth, fifth, sixth plate, no. You don't want it. Not only do you not like it, you hate it after a while. That's the nature of material life. It goes from loving it and going crazy, doing anything for it, to the point where it's just disgusting. But of course, spiritual life is not like that. You can be full, but then full, fuller, fuller, and so on. More and more full, overflowing.
But in Brahma-Buddha stage, Prashanta-atma, what is that? Is not satiated?
One place Prabhupada says, there's a kind of happiness in Brahma-Buddha because you're not going to die. You realize, I'm not going to die. Because we're always in fear. We're always afraid of death, consciously or subconsciously. We're always afraid of dying. So just that relief, it's a kind of relief, of course, that's the idea. The doctor tells you, oh, you don't have cancer anymore. So, oh, a great relief. Now you have to build your body back up and so on. So that's Brahma-Buddha's, like that. No more suffering, exactly, but no positive enjoyment is there. And that's the idea. The ananda is not awakened. That has to be awakened in association with Krishna. That's why the Brahman is not satisfying in their return from their so-called yogis. Because they didn't find Krishna there. They didn't find what they were looking for. They thought they were looking for the light, but they were looking for the person behind the light. They turned away, decided to go back. They didn't continue the journey. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. There's more confirmation, says wonderful class. I agree with Nanda, want to hear more on these topics.